Your host Sully, and the locomotion is in full drive. Here we are with the one, the only, Chris Gann. He's both an actor and action actor. Mr. Gann has been able to portray intense, amusing, and laid-back personas coming from a Lake Tahoe farm lifestyle. He found early on that he could do anything he set his mind to. He has doubled actors like Jay Harrington, Liev Schreiber, and Eric Dane, and also done professional international jet skiing competing. His film credits include Triple X, the indie western Free Bad Men, and Transformers Free, with recent guest spots on Sleepy Hollow, NCIS, and Deputy. He has had a recent recurring role as a Kill Squad agent on The Old Man, as well as one of the shady councilmen on The Cleaning Lady. He was recently interviewed on Memories of a Moonbird podcast, so welcome. Let's have some
fun. Hey, awesome. Thanks for having me. Glad to be on the Jacked Up podcast. Let's go.
Thanks. Let's do it. So I'm most intrigued on how you went from jet skiing to the Universal stunt shows to movie and TV. But altogether, what were some earlier side hustles prior to that that you felt influenced your modus operandi to where you said, this is how I get up in the morning, this is how I form my day, and this is how I kick ass on screen?
Wow. Yeah.
I'll just get right into the thick of it. Sorry.
Sure. Well, the funny thing, you know, you've had a lot of, I know, entertainers and stuff. And the one thing that's kind of different for people on film and television or whatever is like, we all have our own path, right? Like you have wonderful actors who've gone to Juilliard and they have this extensive training. You have London actors, you know, that are just amazing. And then you have reality stars from America who, you know, win American Idol and they become a TV star. You know, it's, we all have our own path. And my path was, you know, I just followed passions. I know that sounds a little corny, but what I did is I got kind of consumed with what I fell in love with. When I was a young kid in high school and stuff, it's all about sports. You know, like I was I played all the major sports. I was an avid I was an avid snow skier. I became a snow ski instructor, snowboard instructor.
Wow.
I used to get over 100 days a year when I lived in Tahoe. You know, I was on the mountain a lot and I was in the lake in the winter. And I mean, that's all I really wanted to do, you know, and if I had a job, if I had a job, it was to support those athletic hobbies, you know, and it's just where I was the happiest. I think the stunt and acting world actually found me, because what I really wanted to do when I was younger, and I was racing jet skis professionally. I was lucky enough to race all around the country in the summer. And then in the winter, we would get invited to race in different countries. So I'd get to go to, I mean, I've been to 12 or 13 countries as a jet ski racer. And, you know, I was 18 to 24 years old when all this was happening. So I was pretty spoiled. Yeah, I got to travel the world and everything. But I think at the end of my career, I kind of figured that I didn't want to be a professional jet ski racer anymore. Like I kind of, it ran its course. The racing industry changed. And I really wanted to be a sports broadcaster. And that's what I was going to school for.
Yeah. Journalism.
So, yeah. So the people who ran the jet ski tour, they had three TV shows on different networks. And they knew that. I was friends with them because of the racing. And they offered me the job of doing the color commentary, doing interviews and stuff. And so all of a sudden, I was on ESPN. I was on ESPN2. I was on Fox Sports. And I was killing it. You know, I was a young guy and I kind of gave up racing for that, which I was completely happy with. And I, you know, I kind of said, this is my path. I'm going to end up on Sports Center, be a host, you know. And then one fateful week in the middle of all this, all three of the shows I was on got canceled. The tour had a couple sponsors. One was Kawasaki, one was Budweiser. Budweiser decided to pull out, and when Budweiser pulled out, the sponsor Kawasaki pulled out because of Budweiser. So they lost all their TV rights. So I learned early on that, you know, nothing's forever. And I went from having these three jobs and kind of living my dream as a sports broadcaster to not having any work. I dabbled in modeling and, you know, I was trying to get commercial work and stuff. I was fresh out of college and, you know, I wasn't making a living at, you know, with any either of those. And a good friend of mine I raced with who retired from jet ski racing to become a stuntman on the movie Waterworld. You remember that movie, Costner?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
My buddy, Larry Rippenkroger, one of my best friends to this day, he he did all the cool jet ski stunts in that movie. You see any flying jet skis, skis going underwater on fire? That was him. He killed it. You know, he was a fabulous jet skier, still is. But anyway, you know, I didn't quite get the whole thing. But what he did is Larry called me after that movie came out and he said, "Hey, Universal Studios in Hollywood is making a live stunt show based on that movie called Waterworld." And he goes, "I know you're looking for something and you'd be perfect for this. We'll teach you the stunt stuff. We'll teach you how to fight. We'll teach you the acting state on stage. But you know, the tool you have is your jet ski and you have the right look for it. And the guys they've seen, they just aren't good enough jet skiers in this small pond." And it's like, that's like, I was on a jet ski every day. That was easy stuff for Larry and my friend and I. So I'm like, yeah, second I need nature. A job. Yeah. So, you know, I just took it as a paying gig. I thought it'd be fun. You know, I'd be on a jet ski but shortly after that, I was lucky to go through the auditions and I got the part and they started training me for 2 months. I was on with like 50 other stuntmen and women, Larry, my friend Rippenkroger being one of them. And man, I tell you, I just fell in love with the people, like the other stunt performers. And I fell in love. Showing
you a world you've never embraced.
Yeah. Yeah. And I tell you, they were such talented people. Their levels, their skill levels, they were all different. Like I was kind of good at everything, but we had like world-class gymnasts. We had, you know, guys who were, you know, Division One fire, you know, high divers that, you know, go off 100-foot cliffs and competitions. I mean, just incredibly talented people. And they were just great salt of the earth. And we all hit it off. That was the first thing. The second thing is I really like to perform. It's like something I missed from racing. My racing days were over. And I had something. I was performing in front of a crowd. It was physical. And I felt like I had that again. Right. So
did
I
kind
started,
of feel, sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, no, please.
Did you kind of feel, as a follow-up to that, did you kind of feel like you were kind of almost getting kind of a stand-up kind of reaction? You start kind of looking for the reactions of the audience, or did it not directly influence your work at all?
It did influence my work, trust me. It got that adrenaline going that I had when I raced. And, you know, I was probably guilty of not performing my best when the crowds were kind of bored and maybe not very full and it was cold and they weren't into it. And I wish I could say I didn't, but when, you know, if you get in the summer and it's sold out and people are yelling and you're getting them wet and they're excited, it was just wonderful. You know, it was a wonderful experience for me. It not only was it a wonderful experience, but it taught me how to be a stuntman. And it introduced me to acting and the film and television world, like how you get paid and how much money you can make and, you know, how to get work and everything. So for the next 7 or 8 years, I worked there, got my SAG card, started doing commercials and slowly worked my way into the film and television industry until I could quit that show. And that was about 2001, 2002. And that's about the time that you mentioned one of my the credits you mentioned was XXX.
Yes, that's your baby.
Yeah, that was my first break, you know, after years and years of kind of not really booking little things. But, you know, that was one that changed my life a little bit. You know, financially, it changed my life. The people I worked with. I mean, I worked with Rob Cohen, the director. I've worked with Rob like 4 or 5 times since then. You know, like he's an A-list director. He's done, his resume right. Speaks for itself. And I've done commercials with him. I've done, you know, I consider him a friend, you know, and, you know, the stunt people I worked with on that show were like the top people in the business. They put together all the stunts and they put their trust
Johnny
in
Meyer,
me.
Gregory Barnett, Jeff Caliente, Simon Reed.
Yeah. Yeah. Some good names right there. Yeah. And Jeff Caliente, you mentioned his name real quick. He's another person who put me on the map. Like he was one of my best friends in the business. And he was brave enough to hire me when I didn't have a lot going on. And he put me in big stunt spots, which I owe a lot to him. And I owe a lot to Larry Rippenkroger, because Larry, if it weren't for him, like I would have never discovered this world. I don't think I'd probably be on ESPN right now, you know, living in Connecticut or something.
there's just no telling where it would have gone, you know. You're here. All together, how would you describe where your workout plan has kind of evolved now? And any other mentors you also want to mention
from that? Sure. Yeah. It's funny now. Okay. So let's fast forward. Now we're at 2023. I was kind of telling I was telling you a story about the late 90s, you know, into the early 2000s. Since then, you know, I've been really lucky with work. You know, I probably have 200 or 300 credits of stunts and acting. I think I have, I don't know what the exact number, but what I've learned doing all that work is how much I appreciate to work with people I like working with. And there's a lot of people that I work with regularly, and that's on purpose, you know, like granted, I get along with 99% of the people in this business. They're mostly all wonderful people. I mean, it's a very high percentage of great people. The percentage of kind of douchey people you hear about, it's really, really low. And the reason you hear about it is because it's so unexpected, right? Mm-hmm. But for the most part, the people that the everyday working, you know, crew person or performer in Hollywood, they're great people. And I resonated with some, and I have, you know, if you look at, I'm not telling anybody to go research my IMDb, but you'll see that like there's people I worked with 50 times over on some of those projects, the same people. Tim Michalecki is one of my best friends, and we've done so many projects together. And it's like, if I do a project, it's like, okay, where do I put Tim? You know, and if he does one, you know, we have a couple films in pre-production right now. And
I think that name, wasn't he one of the golf stunt doubles in Expendables, or am I thinking of a different?
No, I don't think so. Tim works a lot as a coordinator. One of my great friends. I mean, I think in a nutshell, there's a group of, you know, people I can probably count on my hands that I work with over and over and over again. There's a company called Ninth House Films. Mm-hmm. They do a lot. Look them up. They do wonderful films. A lot of Lifetime films, Tubi originals. They do horror films. Yeah. I think I've done over 20 films with them.
I was actually going to ask you about the Lifetime ones, because I did see one of those psycho thrillers, and it did have a very cool stairway fall.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember which one, but I just remembered, it was like, hey, oh, that dude from XXX24, he coordinated it. And so it was cool to see some familiar faces in an otherwise Ontario location. Actually, I think, was that Atlanta or Ontario?
I think it was Ontario. That's a very good. That's impressive. Yeah. Ninth House does most of their films in LA. I live in both. I have a house in Atlanta, and I have a house in LA. But Ninth House, it's Jake Helgren who directs and is a producer. Autumn Federici's a producer. They run this company, and the people they hire is like a family, you know. And like I said, they've probably done 40 movies together. I've done half of those, you know, cause they don't all have stunts, but it's like, I'm so look forward to working with people like that. You know, I'm so blessed to be able to work with people that I love working with. I mean, how many people can say that on a regular basis?
Exactly. I it's just so disillusioning when you just hear about people who were together for like half a decade and they couldn't stand each other each day they went to work. It's just like, that's to have to force yourself to get along. I mean, we all have to do it, but when it gets to be grating, it just really does kind of open your eyes up to how fame and fortune and just anything else can be harder than it has to be sometimes, you know?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It's one of the blessings of my career is I find myself working with people, you know, that I love, you know, they're just people that mean so much to me. And I can't tell you how grateful I am to have this career and to be working in this industry.
1,000%. And just since you've been so approachable and you've been so fortunate to work with so many who you see eye to eye with, what is your personal take on for those getting into any kind of career field, especially an entertainment field, whether it's a theme park or I hear horror stories from pals that work at Six Flags all the time, but which is a shame because I like to think that there's some competently run theme park, but what do you recommend for when you work on any project and the client hasn't done their part? where they haven't been crystal clear with what they're expecting from you. How do you, the participant, find a way to just be a little more just patient with their misunderstanding that they've caused?
Well, yeah,
not easy. Some people lose it on them, and then that person, the idiot, happens to be friends with the casting director and says, "Don't invite this guy back for me being a jackass to him."
Yeah. Well, you know, hey, no job's perfect. You know, no. Like, you kind of, depending what job it is, you know, like if I'm behind the camera, let's say I'm stunt coordinating, for example. You know, once I come onto a project, you know, I'm kind of committed to it, and
right.
And every project kind of has its fleas, and I mean that is like, you know, you have to put fires out. You have to it's not going to go perfectly. You know, there's so mm-hmm. many elements that go into filmmaking, and I think you're not always going to have a great day. Like, yeah, I told you about all the wonderful people I work with and how much fun I have. It's like, but you know what, I don't have great, not every day is a great day, but
no.
Even those bad days, I like, hey, let's attack this. Let's figure this out. Where are we falling apart here? Is it communication? Is it expected? It's like, okay, if we can't give you what you thought you were going to get, what can we give you? You know, what can we do to make this thing work? Let's get through our day so that, you know, this is still successful.
Reevaluate instead of saying, well, I guess we lost the whole day because 6 hours in we're still AWOL.
Yeah. And so a lot of that stuff too, it's like, it's not usually one person's fault. I mean,
no,
it could be locations, it could be weather, it could be, a traffic jam that kept, you know, the sound guy from getting whatever,
pulled out.
So, yeah. I mean, it's everything's happened, right? So, you got to kind of take the good with the bad. And one of my favorite scenes is like water off a duck's back, you know, like,
yes,
you know, like, hey, you're going to, you know, getting mad, especially on a film set, you know, that that behavior doesn't help anything. It doesn't help you get through the day. It doesn't, you know, like mm-hmm. people are probably clearly understand when somebody's frustrated. And if people decide to handle things that way, I wouldn't recommend it, you know, but, again, you're not always going to have a perfect situation, but you know, if you really love this business, you'll understand that. And, you know, the harder you work, the closer you'll get to projects that are always run well, that are always streamlined, that are all, you know, I mean, even the biggest projects in the world have problems, you know, like, you know, we got shut down. I was on a movie, during COVID, and it was, it's coming out. It's called They Clone Tyrone. It's a Jamie Foxx movie. It's going to be on Netflix, I think, this year.
Sweet.
And, it was so COVID restricted that we had to check into a hotel. We had to quarantine for 5 days in the hotel. We had a barcode. And once after our quarantine, and then we tested twice a day for 5 days, couldn't leave our hotel room. Literally, we had to have food brought in from, you know, services, you know, stuff like that. Once you got through the protocol of 5 days, you couldn't leave the hotel unless you're going to work. So you would have a barcode. You would leave the hotel, give them a barcode. You had 24 minutes to get to work. And then you would check in at work. If you didn't check in 24 minutes, you were fired because they said, we're giving you 6 extra minutes, you know, but you know, there wasn't a lot of traffic during 2020. And, you know, so they filled our cars up. So you take your gas cap off and they come by and fill your car up, but you couldn't go anywhere.
Oh, wow.
That was like a 3 month movie. You know, it's 3 months people were doing that. They bought out a hotel to do that. Can you imagine all the problems you could find with that?
Yeah, or, there's definitely some holes, but at the same time, I if you buy out that hotel, then yeah, there's no time. Yeah,
I mean, I guess my point to that is like, there's a lot you could complain about, but I was so grateful to be working again when nobody else was working, when everybody was at home, and I was lucky enough to be on this movie. And yeah, I was getting COVID tested twice a day. And yeah, I had somebody checking me in and checking me out, and I couldn't go to 7-Eleven. I couldn't go anywhere, you know, but you know what? I was grateful. Like, I always remember how grateful I was that I was working, because I love to work. I love to be around these people. And, And I think it's going to be a really good movie. Jamie Foxx is hilarious. And, but, you know, I hope when, you know, people listening to the podcast and you see the movie, maybe think about that. Think about the cast and crew were at this hotel for 3 months, you know, and, you know, trying to dodge a COVID bullet right in the heart of the, you know, thing. And we did. And if, you know, if you enjoy the movie, just remember all those people were doing that, you know?
Yeah. It's very disheartening when you see so many online snobs who will just want to nitpick. And it's like, well, guess what? This blooper you saw in this movie wasn't evident years ago. And yeah, it might be a good movie or a bad movie, but that no one went out of their way to make a bad movie. Or just because you see this entertainment doesn't mean it was easy to make. And so, yeah, like you say, it is having to consider it. People like to be negative for the sake of negative, and you do have to kind of rein them in and say, hey, unless there's a point to this, you got to just be thankful that you're here and keep bridging this gap. But like you say, that when you got to make that giant adjustment, 3 months can fly like clockwork if you really make it. But then there's other times where it doesn't make any difference, and you just got to say, hey, this is what's happening right now. I wish I could change it, but I can't.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, all the criticism and stuff is fine. You know, there's so many people in the world now that they can all have their own opinion, you know. But you're right. It is so hard to make a great, like The Godfather or make a movie like that. That's what makes those movies so stand out, right? It's like if you ever watch The Offer, it's a TV show on Paramount Plus.
Yes.
And it's about the making of The Godfather. And it's like how all that stuff had to come together.
Spot on casting, right?
Yeah.
I mean, man.
Yeah.
I was wondering this whole time, who are they going to get to play Coppola's cinematographer who worked with all the other greats? And they found a guy and a few other guys who have done all kinds of things. And I was just like, and some people thought it was a spoof at first. I'm like, no, guys, this is how they did it back then.
Yeah.
No one wanted to do it. And then when they made it, they still had all these other jobs.
Yeah. I mean, and that's how making a movie or a TV series is. It's just one obstacle after another. It is really, really hard to make something of that quality. So it's fine. If people, they can criticize stuff, that's fine. That's their right. And that's the beauty of it. And you can watch a bad movie and kind of still enjoy it if you're a real film fanatic, right?
So 1,000%.
Yeah.
I actually have Waterworld Uncut on Blu-ray. So long story short, this guy who was big into it, like owned a old outdated VHS copy of the extended TV cut, and he was hired by Universal and Arrow Video to take both cuts together. Take the extended TV footage remastered with the remastered uncut movie, and he made a way more complete movie.
Oh, wow.
But it is sad to know that it took both the director and the lead star and the studio to abandon it. And then 30 years later, we now have the version the fans wanted to see. But you just gotta, like you say, you can't just let the negativity reign over you. You just gotta say, hey, at least you finally got the version of the movie you want to see.
Yeah.
Yeah. No more Heaven's Gate reactions. You can just say, hey, there is a better version. But like you say, sometimes the damage is already done. Yeah, no, it is interesting how people close to a movie will abandon it. And then there's like a better version of a movie. But because audiences are so disillusioned by that other version, you kind of saw that with Justice League's. The damage was done. And you just got to talk to just the constructive people who actually want to see a different version of said movie.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if it improves whatever issue you can fix with a touch of an editing button. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's so many people and so many man hours go into making a movie or a TV show. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's so, you know, when the great ones, when they do come out, it's like we got to enjoy them. But, you know, they don't always have to be completely great to enjoy as well. You know, I've been in some turds, but I had a great time making them, you know, like, yeah. So I try to remember that. I try to remember the experience, and I don't think myself. Yeah. you know, and you just try not to take yourself too seriously, because, you know, you're trying to do something. If it then turn out, it's like, it's not really from lack of effort, you know?
Exactly. Of all the names, you want to collab, down the road again, who are some other ones who, just being on screen with them, you still kind of just remember that day and you're like, I want to relive that day, just because like that was just so genuine and just gentle and heartwarming. You know, you've worked with so many, like Danny Trejo and Gloria Rubin, and interacting with them in these various scenes, and these shows are interesting, and because they also allow for a lot of comedy and gentle drama, I call it, is very laid back, heartwarming stuff. So,
yeah, I think you're going to like this story. So I think anybody who's worked in the business as long as I have, they have a Samuel Jackson story, right?
They know your line and their lines.
Yeah. I mean, the guy's been in everything. He's been, you know, he's constantly working. I'm going to go back to the day I got to the project. I got my SAG card on. It was a movie with Dustin Hoffman, Samuel Jackson, Sharon Stone.
Sphere.
Right. So I was very new, and I just got my first agent. I was working at Waterworld, and I lived in Sacramento still, but it was before I moved to Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
My wife was a teacher, and I would, my days at Waterworld would be like a Sunday through a Tuesday. So I'd wake up and do a 6-hour drive on Sunday morning and go do shows for 3 days and then come back, you know? So they were making Sphere in Northern California, mostly on a soundstage. And I got the job of Liev Schreiber's stand-in. My agent got me that to get me my SAG card. She goes, yeah, you do this for 3 or 4 days, or, you know, as long as you want. And so anyway, long story short, my first day working, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know where to go. I was kind of lost. And people were kind of bossing me around. And
they never tell you what to do either. Yeah, so it's like, yeah, what the hell, guys?
Yeah. I think they kind of expect you to have a little more experience than I had. Anyway, they go, okay, yeah, go have lunch. So I kind of followed everybody over to lunch, and, you know, everybody kind of knew each other. So they were sitting together. So I sat at a table by myself. Now, remember, this is 1996. Okay. So I'm sitting at a table by myself. I kind of have my head down, just eating. I'm fine. I'm kind of learning all this stuff. And all of a sudden, a tray drops down next to me across the table, Samuel Jackson. So I'm sitting there, and you know, he's just being a dude. You know, he's not like, hey, buddy, you know, he's just eating lunch. And here, you know, there's all these people having lunch, and I'm sitting at a table, and I just look, and we shared a few words. Somebody came by and asked him, they were playing golf. And he said, I'm an avid golfer. So we talked about golf for maybe 3 or 4 minutes, and went back to eat my lunch. I'm like, I remember coming home and telling my wife about it. I go, wow, it's kind of a weird day. And we, you know, treats it too great. But, man, I had lunch with Samuel Jackson. We talked about golf. I go, that was awesome. Right. Okay. So this is a 3-part story. So bear with me. Fast forward to XXX. Okay. So now I'm on XXX. It's 2002. Yeah. Right. And now I'm starring in the movie with Samuel Jackson. And I don't have any scenes with him. I was kind of hoping to see him, and I may have seen him, but it was such a big movie, you know, any Vin Diesel movie, they're big. There's hundreds and hundreds of people. And, but my dad, was in town, and you know, when you're starring in a movie and it's big like that, it's like, hey, now I know a little bit more. It's like, hey, I'd like my dad to come. Like, oh, sure. I'll have a PA show him around. We'll take him around all the sets. You know, it was a big movie, big sets. So my dad comes around, and I'm working and going through hair and makeup and everything. And PA picks him up in a golf cart and goes, let me show you around the movie set. Really nice to him. This is a completely different, this is a 180 from my first day when I worked on Sphere. Right now, I have people, you know, taking my dad around. And so anyway, they showed my dad the whole set. They introduced him to Rob, the director. And then they said, hey, Mr. Gann, would you like to have lunch? We don't have lunch for another hour, but you want to, you know, Chris won't be working until after lunch. And he goes, yeah, sure. So they bring him to this fully catered tent that they put up that literally will hold 200 people. It's like, that's how big it is. And it's like fully catered. When I mean fully catered, I mean, you have a fish option, you have a steak option, you have a chicken option, you have a vegan option. You know, it's nice, right? So my dad is here having lunch, and he's the only one in this tent that holds 200 people because it's just too early. And he goes and he's sitting down, and all of a sudden, he sits down having lunch, and Samuel Jackson comes and sits down at the table and sits down and has lunch with him. He goes, "Do you mind if I sit here?" So my dad was starstruck, you know, because I'm sure I told him the story about Sam and I having lunch on Sphere. He said he shared the story with them, and Sam was like, "Oh yeah, I remember." And I'd be surprised if he really remembered, because he's been on everything. But
right,
people
can get unintentionally annoyed, and it's like they don't mean any wrong, but they can only remember so many.
Right. So anyway, my dad was so excited about that. He was so starstruck, and he told the story about having lunch with Samuel Jackson for 20 years. He passed away a few years ago, but
I'm sorry.
That was one of those, thank you. It was one of those just experiences that he'll never forget, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, now here's the third part of the story. Okay, I did a movie for Apple TV called The Banker.
Yes.
with Samuel Jackson. And I play an FBI agent, and I actually arrest him. And and I'm like, this is like, I don't know, 2017, 2018, something, maybe 19.
Yeah,
I can't remember.
One of Apple's
exactly.
First movies. Yeah.
Yeah. And a good movie, by the way. If you're Apple TV, I'd highly recommend it. But
yeah, he and Anthony
anyway,
Mackie, I really bought as.
Yeah. Yeah. He's great. Good guy, too. Anyway, so I'm now working with Sam, and I was kind of excited about this. So I go back to the first time we had lunch, and then I tell him about XXX, and he goes, yeah. He goes, he said, "Everybody's got a Sam Jackson story, I think. I've been doing this so long." And, but my stories with him are like three, you know, I got to kind of go full circle with him and then tell him about that. Like after he had lunch with my dad, I never saw him again. I never had any scenes with him. So like he'd be somewhere else. And he went to Prague, and I didn't have to go to Prague for XXX. So I never got to see him and tell him how much that meant to my dad. But it's like I had these two experiences with him at very interesting parts of my career. And he just couldn't have been a nicer dude, you know. And it was so then to go full circle and be able to kind of, you know, remember those stories with him. And then he just kind of laughed and said, "Yeah, I've been doing this so long. Everybody's got a Sam Jackson story."
Totally.
So anyway.
And from these interactions, do you also kind of feel like everyone's also understanding each other a little better? Like just how this business works and everything, and how everyone can actually have kind of a heartfelt conversation.
Well, yeah, you know, it's funny too, because it is a business, you know, like you brought up some names like Danny Trio. Like I worked with Danny, you know, obviously in XXX and a couple other times, and I've ran into him a few times. and Gloria was great. Gloria and I got, you know, we did a lot of episodes of Saints and Sinners together, and we got to, you know, we were friendly. She was wonderful and such a talented actress. And but you know, these people are just in, you know, they work in film and television, and it's just like, let's just say you work at Best Buy, you know, and you work with a bunch of dudes and a bunch of gals, and it's like you guys share a story. I mean, it's really the same thing at the end of the day, where it feels a little different because you'll see people on TV and it feels different, but reality wise it really isn't. You know, it's like we're talking about when we have, you know, Glory and I were talking about a sports bar, you know, like I can't remember the first and second, you know, we did like 10 episodes together, but one of the episodes, it was like, she was telling me about, we were at different hotels. We were shooting in Atlanta, and she was like, "Oh yeah, this sports bar is where I went, you know, watching the Final Four," something like that. You know, like that's, you're just having normal everyday conversations with these people. Cause this
exactly.
is a bunch of people working together, you know?
And fortunately, it's like, everyone is slowly kind of just become comfortable to where now, okay, return to reality.
Yeah.
We're not having to be on different levels, you know, figure out the different egos and everything.
Now, yeah, exactly.
We all make sense.
And then you kind of can go back to my first day when I told you I didn't know what I was doing. I'd walk around. I mean, I didn't really, you know, I didn't have anything in common with those people. I mean, did I? I mean, it was my first day. It was like, I was kind of excited. It's all new to me. But then, you know, you fast forward 20, 25 years, 400 credits, 300, whatever it is. You have a lot in common with these people, and you're, you know, you have these shared experiences, you know, like the Sam Jackson stories I had, you know, like three times in my career, you know, I got to, and it's like, you know, he's like an icon. He's going to win a Mark Twain Award. I mean, the guy's, you know, he's just, everybody loves that guy. You know, he's super funny, by the way. And he doesn't put up with any shit. And, but he's got a great sense of humor, and, he lives for this stuff. I mean, he doesn't need to work, you know, but he absolutely lives for this stuff.
Did you ever hear his Call of Duty story?
Uh-uh.
This guy, I'm sure he's told you many stories, but like, it was just an awesome story, because like, it's like 2010, 2012. He's just watering his lawn and doing all other sorts of house chores, and his wife's car breaks down. She's pissed. He's trying to comfort her, and literally within 20 minutes, he gets a call to be in this Call of Duty add-on where he's with all these other horror greats like Freddy Krueger and Sarah Michelle Gellar's Buffy and everything. He's like, hey, we're doing a zombie expansion. You're playing a version of your machete character that's also kind of like you. You want to do it? And he's like, well, my wife's car just broke, so sure. It was just a total, is like, well, how about that? Okay. But just how you got from point A to point B, I was like, what?
Yeah.
That checks out. It's a Danny Trejo.
Yeah. Wait, Danny's another one. You remember earlier when we started the conversation, how we all have different paths. I mean, how could you duplicate the path he had to get to where he is? And I don't know if you ever get down to LA, but he has a whole chain of restaurants now.
That are very popular. San Francisco, which is similar but different. You know, it'd be like comparing Houston to Austin. Not similar but different. But
For your listeners, look up Danny Trejo's restaurants. Okay, Trejo's Tacos, Trejo's Donuts, Trejo's. He has a cantina. He has bars.
It made an appearance in Bosch recently.
Did he?
His taco shop, and it was so funny because the characters are actually playing. Guess the 12 Degrees of Danny Trejo, and none of them know any of his movies. They're like, I've never seen From Dusk Till Dawn or Heat. I know the guy. God. I know the face.
How do you not see those two movies? Yeah. But anyway, he's, you know, what a path he's led. You know, that's what's cool about the business. And you asked a question earlier about starting. It's like, you never know where this can take you. You know, like, he's a perfect example. Like, he's the coolest dude, and he's so grateful, but it's like, he has a chain of donut shops. Like Trejo's Donuts, like, he's extremely popular. Like, it's like, you know, this is, you know, his story. He's in jail, and now he's, you know, he's had this career. So it's a pretty neat industry. It takes a bunch of castaways, you know, and artistic. Yeah. And, you know, no matter where you came from, and it kind of puts an interesting group of people together.
It really does. That's electric, though. I had no idea he had branched out into donuts. I had seen the taco shops and heard all great stuff about how he was sharing it with other mom and pop stores. And I think that was what really gelled with everyone and just gave him a good feeling, is seeing him kind of help out some of the other helping communities instead of just put my persona and name on it.
Yeah. Very. Yeah.
It's exactly. About everybody. And, pass all the good luck around. Pay it forward.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. It's like, who would have ever expected it? You know, like, I don't know who came to him with that idea, but it was brilliant.
absolutely. Are there any of the other film buffs that you're just dying to just be in another production with? Yeah, you mentioned Rob Cohen. In the past, you mentioned Ryan Murphy and Perry Lang, and That Michael Bay story had me bawling. I'm like, yeah, that sounds like Michael Bay. You dive from the parachute. I can't. You get up here.
yeah, you know, Yeah, there's one person in particular that you just mentioned. I loved working with Tyler Perry. I mean, that was.
Oh, literally Perry Lang, but yeah, Tyler Perry. That works too. Yeah. I hear he's a nice guy.
Yeah, but both Perry's cool too. Perry's a very talented storyteller. But Tyler Perry, I was on Have and Have Nots. I did about 20 episodes on that show over 3 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler is such an incredibly, you just like being around. He's just one of those people you'd like to be around. Like, he's just, there's an aura about him, right? And he's got the biggest heart. And here's this billionaire, right? He writes all the episodes. He's behind camera directing all the episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And he produces all the episodes. And this is just one of his many things that he does. We're on his studio. That is, his studio in Atlanta is 40 acres larger than the Warner Brothers studio. To give you an idea of the massive size of this amazing studio. And this guy, his story, where he came from to accomplish all that, and he's still a pretty young guy. I mean, I think he's about 50 years old. And he was one of the most inspirational people I've ever worked with. And I've auditioned quite a few times for his shows since, which I'm grateful for. And I look forward to working with him again because I love being around him. I'm inspired by him. And there's a lot of people I can say that about, but Tyler Perry, you know, I just have a soft spot in my heart for him, how much I enjoyed working for him and, you know, what he's done. You know, talk about Danny Trejo and Tyler.
Yeah.
What he gives back is incredible. You know, he's always looking to help people. Like, I think that's his key is he wakes up and he's like, you know, subconsciously, he's probably thinking, who could I help today? You know,
that's sweet. That really is. I mean, I've heard his studio has helped out some of the other Atlanta productions, like for TV One and Marvel. And so it's cool to know that, you know, he's got this business model where he wins, everyone else he's working with wins, and then just numerous other people all win and look forward to the next collaboration. That's very dope.
From what I saw, he treats everybody very well, but he treats actors like artists incredibly well. You are very well treated and taken care of when you work for Tyler Perry on any of his productions. And he makes sure that when you get ready, when it's your time to shoot, that you're 100% prepared. You know, people who work around him are the same way. It's like that's kind of people he resonates with. You know, his casting directors that he uses are wonderful. And all the production team, you know, they're all, you know, special people. And, it was a highlight of my life working for him, and I can't wait to, you know, to be with him again on another project. And I know it's coming. You know, I'm pretty confident we will be working together again. So
that's lovely.
Yeah.
Are there any others like that you kind of just wanted to pick their mind because you were just so intrigued by how they get up and, you know, at 4 a.m. and are able to maintain stability on any kind of film set? You know, you've had John Watts, David Ayer, some of these other guys who I've heard nothing but great things about, you know, worked on big, worked on small, they can do whatever without feeling overwhelmed by a studio head who's pressuring them to get this and that in the can.
Yeah. It's funny that, some of the stuff you work on, that was a very interesting question because I think the way my mind works is I always pay attention to the people let's just say I have a small acting role or I'm on a couple episodes. Tyler was different because he directed all the episodes I was in. So I spent a ton of time with him. When I'm on different TV shows, a lot of times they switch directors quite regularly, you know, like they won't usually have a director direct multiple episodes.
No, everything's being kind followed.
Maybe they're using the same director and he's doing 2 or 3 or 4 episodes a season, but they usually like, they won't be back to back, you know, because what happens is they'll shoot an episode, they'll start prepping a different episode.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of the way it works. So sometimes you don't get to know you know, some of the names you talked about, I don't get to know them real well, but I'm always curious about how they do their job. And everybody kind of has their own process at how they get there. And like Rob Cohen, for example, like he's very casual. You know, Rob's cool. Very easygoing, and his energy just it creates a relaxed atmosphere, you know, and he just never feels pressured about making his day, you know, like, you know, he does such big shows, for example. Michael Bay is, I mean, that's, you know, there's another guy who doesn't, you know, have any pressure about making his day because his shows are so big. And I've worked on so many of his projects, you know, from his other companies. And you know, they're all successful, but he just does such big shows that, like, he can just kind of do whatever he wants. There's no budgetary concerns anywhere, you know, because they know if they're making a Transformers, it's like, oh yeah, well, it's going to make $1 billion, but they're going to make four times that in toy sales. Like, yes. Like it's just such a huge thing. So, but like Rob Cohen, like he directs films and you just feel like he's got your back. It's very comfortable. You know, it's a fun day at work. You know, so it's always different. You know, I don't know if I exactly answered your question, but you
totally did. So you kind of, you do observe it from afar, but yeah, it's kind of,
yeah. Yeah.
Have you ever heard any of their commentary tracks? Rob sometimes gets a little naughty and it's kind of funny.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised.
We're making everybody sexier.
Yeah.
Look yeah. at me go. Cause like he's had the same cinematographer for a while. He's also had a big directing career, and I don't know what it is with his lens, but he knows how to make everybody feel sexy or sweaty on screen. He has it.
Yeah, for sure. And that, you know, that's kind of the, I mean, that's a little of the shows he does too, right? I mean, that's important, you know, it's, it's certain genres that's more important than, you know, like a German film with subtitles about, you know, like a petting zoo or something. It's like, it's not going to be quite as important as, you know, like Fast and Furious, where, you know, you got, you know, Rob did the first Fast and Furious, and I know that's a successful franchise, but that is by far the best movie of the franchise. The first one, the best story, the best acting, the best practical action, in my opinion. I mean, it's hands down, and it's become something bigger, and it all started with that first Fast and Furious, you know?
Yeah.
So
it went to the Point Break formula, just show a dangerous undercover operation.
He's figured it out, and you know, he's got his niche too, where he does, you know, he does stuff like that. But there's different days at work. You know, Rob's another one. He's been so loyal to me. Like, I've done so many commercials with him, and I've done, you know, and he's been offered me some stuff that I wasn't available for, and you know, like, he's, and I go to all his movie premieres. Like, Rob is just one of those guys. He's just like, I'll tell you a quick story about Rob Cohen on XXX. Mm-hmm. Now, remember, that was such a big role for me. At that time, I was probably working 5 days a week.
You're very hysterical in it. And you happen to be in a lot of the funny moments that everyone remembers, like the, I went for this shit, and you got the, oh, he's talking back to the bad guy. I guess permission to now kick ass.
But Rob, We did a screen test, and they shaved my head. That was the only movie I've ever been bald in. And at the screen test, they shaved my head, and they realized that, like, Vin and I are the exact same size. We're, you know, I'm maybe an inch taller than him, but we're, you know, built the same. And now we have a shaved head, and it's like, I can hear everybody, you know, I've never really done a screen test before, but everybody, I'm standing in front of a green screen, they're shooting it, and I can hear all these people say, hey, we made a mistake. We made him look too much like Vin. and you know, we shouldn't have done that. You know, I don't know why we shaved his head. And I can tell they're talking about replacing me. Like, literally, because my contract was for 4 days, 4 days of work. So they could have easily paid me for 4 days and just replace me, right? Mm-hmm. Rob comes on, and I haven't, besides the audition where I read with Rob, I hadn't really been able to spend any time with him. And Rob comes into this conversation, and he's like, you guys, this is our guy. He goes, we're not changing anything. You guys want to shave his head, deal with it. He totally went to bat for me.
That's cool.
And you know, that was 4 days guaranteed. It ended up being closer to 4 months. That's how big action shows are. I mean,
you know, they had to do some reshoots, I think you said, in that.
recently. Yeah, that's right. We did some reshoots. So the movie shot in America, like kind of, let's say it was 2002. We shot right up to the holidays, and we're going to do that big stunt where we get pulled out of the plane. And then we had this huge rainstorm, and they built a Sky Ranch is a popular ranch where they do a lot of production in LA. They built a runway for this huge plane. It got so muddy, they had to cancel it. They go, well, we're going to go to Prague, and when we come back, we'll do the gag. It's like, okay, now I got to think about it for 3 months.
But, sleep on it.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. So after that, they came back, and, you know, that's kind of the way it went down. But yeah, Rob was in my corner on that. Like, totally had my back. And then he just said some real inspiration. You know, he like really, you know, as an actor, you audition all the time. I mean, I have to audition hundreds of times a year, right?
Yeah,
and it's frustrating. You know, and most of the time it's just business, but most of the time you don't hear anything, you know.
Right.
And Rob, he pulled me aside and he goes, I just want to tell you, it's like, he goes, when I saw you, he goes, I saw a star. He goes, you brought everything to the character that I wanted. And the character had a lot more dialogue, you know, like I had scenes just me and Vin that got cut from the movie. That happens all the time on big shows. But you know, it probably had six scenes cut from the movie. And that's another part of filmmaking. It's just the way it is. But, you know, he was so supportive and he gave me so much confidence. This big A-list director telling me this. I had 5 credits on my resume when I got that. So, I have these memories. And I appreciate the question you asked, because I have memories like that. And, you know, I think about all the people like Rob who've always been there for me, you know. I did a commercial with Jennifer Lopez. It was a Kohl's commercial. Yeah. And Rob directed it. and I did a Burger King commercial with Rob, and, you know, and there was a movie he was doing in Australia that he offered me a part on, and I wanted to do it so bad. And I was just committed. I was actually on the Tyler Perry show, and I was committed and I couldn't do it. But you know, that's the kind of guy Rob was. I mean, Rob's, you know, he could have, he didn't have to remember me, you know. I was this one of his movies, but he's been there for me all this time, you know.
That's very nice, and it's enlightening too, because you're also, like you say, you're getting this feedback, so you know you can do where you mastered versus what others are seeing that you could improve. Because, like you say, I will see so many people just share their resume or their demo reel, and people will either be snobs or not say anything. It's like, well, they only get better if you give them your 2 cents.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, I know you worked long and hard in this. I think that Photoshop needs a little tweaking. Or, hey, you know, I'm really impressed by your stunt reel. I think your acting needs work. Or vice versa. I like your acting. I didn't buy your punch. You know, instead of, well, I think you suck, dude. It's like, well,
yeah.
You suck. You can't even tell me what I'm good at.
Well, yeah. Again, it's one of those things where, you know, I get the way the business is set up. You know, the casting directors work so hard. They see so many people. They have so many assistants working underneath them. And they can see something. It's like, yeah, that was great. But, you know, oh, Chris is great for that. But, you know, we went African-American, or we went woman. We took a woman, or the part got cut, or, you know, they needed to make the demographics work in the episode. It's like, there's so much stuff that goes into actually getting cast in a part that you have no control over.
No.
So I get that. Like, you know, it'd be nice if we always got feedback, but it's not really realistic either. You know, like, and I understand that. And it's like, that's just one of the parts of the business. If you're going to make it in this business, you have to understand that's very important, because otherwise you'll just go crazy.
Yeah.
And the thing that made it special about Rob saying that is, like, I felt that, like, I felt my confidence, but you go on and on and on, and you know, and then to hear it from somebody like that, it's very special. But I don't expect everybody at the same time to be able to do that, because I understand how this is a business, you know. And it's like, you could go to a job at Wendy's, right? And you could give them an application. Home Depot. Home Depot. Let's say Home Depot, and you put an application in, and it's like, oh, I didn't get the job. I was like, oh yeah, Well, they don't tell you why. Maybe they had to hire more women. Maybe they had to hire, you know, whatever. It's like stuff. It's a different business, but it's the same thing. It's just we go through it. So I accept it. It's not like it's something that I complain about because I get it. But you have to believe in yourself to be in successful in this business, because quite honestly, it's like there's just days and years where, you know, there's nobody there patting me on the back. I'm telling you, I'm kind of giving you examples of Tyler Perry and Rob Cohen and different people who've made an impact on me. But it's like not everybody has the luxury of doing that. And I understand that. Mm-hmm. That's what makes those experiences so memorable for me, you know.
1,000%. And back to your dude, Larry, I actually just heard about his movie that he directed that you were in, Hot Water. I had no idea about it. It just came out of nowhere. Now I think it's on Tubi and Flex, and it's like, well, here you go.
We'll return after these messages.
Hello and welcome to Culture Shocked, the pop culture podcast brought to you by four aging millennials and our outdated opinions. Join us every Tuesday as we discuss movies, TV, games, and even music, new and old.
Dude, what do you think you're doing?
Are you seriously trying to record a promo without us right now?
Well, yeah.
Dude, you can't just do the promo by yourself. Who's going to listen to that?
Yeah, and you probably haven't even told them that we're a pop culture podcast where we always agree on everything. For instance, the Sam Raimi trilogy easily being the best of the Spider-Man movies.
No. But I think we can all agree that Jaws is a classical masterpiece.
Nope, don't like that. But we do all agree that the sequel trilogy of Star Wars is the best in the Skywalker saga, right, guys?
That comment is so ridiculous. I don't even know where to
Anyways, that'll do it from all of us here at Culture Shock. Thanks for listening.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR, we add them to our queues, we wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan, we're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
A special kind of sports comedy.
Man, yeah, Larry Rippenkroger is an amazing writer. People don't understand, he was, to give you an idea, he was a stand-up jet ski racer who won, you know, dozens of world championships and was hugely popular all over the world, hugely popular in Japan. People would line up for blocks to get autographs from Larry. So when you think, oh, he's a good script writer, it's like, that's the last thing you'd think about Larry because of all his other accomplishments, but he's phenomenal. And the movie Hot Water was such a great script, and it was based on the jet ski tour that we did together for so many years. And man, the road to making that movie was crazy. You could do a 3-hour podcast on the journey of that movie. Larry had to end up doing it, you know, financing himself and shooting it in Lake Havasu where he lives, with locals and friends and stuff like that. But, you know, he had Jack Black attached to that movie. He had a director, big time director who was attached to direct it, who all his movies were a big hit and hits. And if he did it, it was a guaranteed theatrical release. And he passed away on a movie scout, a perfectly healthy guy who was in South Africa on a movie scout. And he passed away. And I mean, just one thing after another happened to Larry, and he persevered and he made that. And it's like, he did a pretty darn good job for his first film too. It's fun. It's funny. It's got great action.
I did see the trailer. It does look like a hoot. Just you're someone's in a dinosaur costume trying out a jet ski for a crowd. How can you not find that funny? I mean,
yeah.
But also, like you say, it does kind of show you behind the scenes of making a giant show. So I think that's why it's going to connect with an even bigger audience, because people can relate to a horror story like that. Oh, and we had to put on this kind of show and it went awry.
Yeah.
I'll tell you how we got there.
Yeah. Yeah. You hope so. You hope it. You hope they do. But yeah, Larry is it's amazing the perseverance he showed to finally make that film. It's such a huge accomplishment.
Do you feel like you and him are kind of like the mirror composites of one another? Because you've both done jet skiing, you've both done the mega blockbusters, you both worked with a lot of the same types, and you both have this patience for this ever-changing industry.
Well, yeah, you did. Everything you just mentioned, we definitely have in common. I'd bring another guy into that.
Sure.
There's a stuntman named Clay Cullen.
I do like Cullen, and he's, I think, the son of Peter Cullen, the Optimus Prime voice actor. Yeah.
Yeah. So Clay is another guy who jet ski raced with me, who started at Waterworld, who's one of my closest friends. Clay is still one of the best stuntmen in the industry. Like, he is in the top 1% of talented. He's amazing on a motorcycle. He's an amazing driver. He's tough as nails. He's just been, and he's in Brand X stunt group, which Larry is, which is like one of the premier stunt groups in our industry. And he is such a successful stuntman, and he's stoked with that. Like, he's like, you know, like I really like acting's my first love. I'll be honest with you. It's, I like stunts still. I love acting. Ripper, Larry. Larry has had a wonderful stunt career, but you know, he wants to write and direct and produce. Clay's is happy killing it as a stuntman, a second unit director, stunt coordinator, and he's if you're lucky enough to have him, you're pretty much guaranteeing that part of your project is going to kick ass, because he's as talented as anybody. Anyway, we've all three been friends since Clay and I were teenagers. Ripper's a little older, you know. Ripper's got maybe 8 or 9 years on us, but you know, Glipper was in his 20s when we all met and we raced together. And those are three guys that, you know, we all had, you know, so our paths are all kind of different. Like, Clay stuck with stunts. He's in, you know, one of the best in the world. Ripper is branched out, and I've been blessed to have a great stunt career. But I think my best days are still to come as an actor. Like, so we all, yes, we have a lot of similarities, and those guys are two of my best friends. And, you know, Larry was at my wedding, you know, like,
that's great.
I mean, they, you know, I've been married for 30 years. They, you know, they've known Jill since Jill was 17, you know, like, that's, it's crazy. Like I've been with these two guys through so much, but you know, like, we also do have a little different, you know, like where we are right now, but man, we still get together. I've done a couple of movies with those guys, and it's just the funnest experiences. I did a movie called Brothers-in-Law, and I had Larry and Clay on, and we're in Oregon. It's a comedy with all Saturday Night Live cast. And
was
we did
that
a bunch of water
2016 movie, I think, that had Jim O'Hare from had Robert
that was
Trini on the show.
That was called Middleman, the Jim
That's
O'Hare movie.
Yeah. That was wild, how you're a trucker who comes out and he kicks him in the head of us. I've wondered if you want to do more comedy roles like that, or
place
in a comedy.
Yeah, comedy's the best. That's my favorite. It was called Brother Nature. I'm sorry, they changed the name.
I did see that one too. Yeah. And it is actually pretty funny, but I know a lot of people didn't give it a chance because they didn't care for the Photoshop poster. I'm like, that's just advertising goofing up. Still, see the movie.
Yeah,
check it out. Have
funny movie. Yeah. great cast, all the Saturday Night Live crews in it. Lorne Michaels produced it. But man, I had Larry and Clay, and I were on that movie for a month together. And Clay and Larry still says it's his second favorite movie of all time. Waterworld was his baby, you know. But we, the fun we had, and every day we're, you know, we're flyboarding, we're jet skiing, we're wakeboarding, we have a ski nautique, we have all the toys, and Jenny Hinkey, the producer, is just the best producer in the world. And so when I get to work with those guys, you know, look, hey, I'm telling your audience, look those guys up, you know, Larry and Clay. If you Clay's stunt reel is beyond him. I mean, he didn't even have a reel. Like, that's how
like dynamite.
He'll just give you a dozen top, you know, $300 million movies that he's done the biggest gags in. You know, like, these guys are super accomplished. But when we can get together on a fairly small comedy, I think it was a $5 million movie, we had so much fun, you know.
And like, we've seen these guys more than most people realize we've seen them. Like, people, I mean, like you were saying earlier, even lesser movies can still be enjoyed. I've seen the fifth Die Hard a bunch of times just because I'm always wanting a easy car chase to try out my home theater system on. It's a great car chase. People just want to complain about just the movie itself. And I just love practical stunts and escapism like that and a return to 80s type cinema. So I'm just more laid back, but everyone agrees that car chase is great, and he got a tourist nomination for that, you know, because it really is a well done car chase.
definitely.
But no, that is cool to have all these personal memories with him, you know, offset, and then actually, again, get a dose of their world and see how comfortable they are in their own skin. That's just delightful. But you did hit on acting, and I was going to ask you about that because I was really moved by your take on how much you echoed a lot of what Eddie J. Fernandez, who is Mexican Wolverine for 22 Jump Street fans, but you echoed a lot of what he was saying. It's like, we should not be called stunts anymore. We are, you know, paid by SAG. We need the action actor label. We need a return to Ben-Hur where they, you know, if just the Globes are and Emmys are acknowledging it, but we need more than that. You know, we do need some award attention. You know, can Cannes come up with some equivalent? You know,
yeah. Well,
and I legit do hope you get to win some kind of Emmy ensemble just one of these days.
Well, I appreciate it. It's one of my goals for sure.
It was very empowering what you said. You're like, this will be for all my brothers and sisters in the stunt saga, but it's also easier said than done because, I mean, there's so many other great shows out there. Like, you were on Ray Donovan and you were on Power, and the shows are popular with critics and audiences, and they get very little awards because you don't know if it's just the subject matter disturbs people or it's hit too close to home. It's like, well, why does, not to diss, but there's got to be a room for them versus just only Breaking Bad, you know, or only Andor, you know?
Well, you know, it's kind of gravy though too, right?
Yes.
Like, I got to work on Mad Men, you know, I doubled John Hamm and, I did maybe five episodes. Ray Donovan was one of my favorites for sure. I loved watching Ray rehearse with John Voight and his family. And Liev, you know, that was kind of a neat thing because after when I met Liev on Sphere, it was his first big movie and we're both like, I don't know, 23 years old, 24.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I'm getting my stag card. I can be a stuntman. He goes, hey, when you can be my stunt double, you're great. You know, cause we're same size and look and stuff. And I got called to double him like three or four times and I was never available. And then Ray Donovan came up and it was 20 years later, or maybe it's 15 years later, but it was, you know, probably 20. And now, you know, Ray's a big, or Liev's a big star and I've had a good career and we saw each other and it's like, I'm like, and he's like, are you kidding me? You know, like, it's like, now we're these middle-aged guys, you know? And, but I think back to what Eddie Fernandez said. So Eddie's great. Eddie's one of the best actors.
DJ.
He's one of the best stuntman actors. And what I mean by that is like, for me, when you say, oh, you're a stunt actor, like you gotta be a stuntman first. You can't just say, oh, I'll do stunts. I'm an actor. Because you're going to get your ass handed to you. You got to be a quality stuntman to really be that. Like, okay, hey, yeah, Eddie, you got two pages of dialogue, and then I need you to go out of that window on the fourth floor into boxes. Like, okay, that's a real stunt, right? That's a real stuntman's gag. You can't have a guy who's like, oh, yeah, I was a lifeguard, and now I want to be a stuntman actor. And like, okay, do that. He'll kill himself. You got to know how to do real stunts. Eddie's that guy. He can do, and you know, I feel like I'm in that category as well, where you almost have to be a stuntman first and have the quality, be tough enough. You know, you have to have a high pain tolerance to be a stuntman. You have to be able to really understand gags, and you have to be able to understand, you have to do them in a repetitive nature, and it's not for everybody. You know, if you're an actor first and you say, now I want to be a stuntman, it's like a lot of times those guys aren't going to make it because, oh, I already fell down those flight of stairs 4 times. I'm not going to do it again. Like, no, you got to do it again. You do it until you get the shot, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just, you have to have that mentality. So for like Eddie, he's one of those guys. You know, he's a real stuntman and he's a real actor. He can act. He's a great actor.
Absolutely. I've had a lot of fun conversations with him. One time I showed him where he was playing a thug with a giant shotgun in a repair shop on the Shield. And he was like, where the hell did you find that? I just took a screenshot. I recognized it. And it was cool because, yeah, like you say, he's fortunately, I think he was hanging around a lot of the people he was doubling. So he's getting tips and tricks from them. And it was just, like you say, it seems like the Buddy Joe Hooker kind of dilemma kind of still applies, where you can get in easier to the industry if you do more than just stand in or extra work. You can do some stunts, and if you, like you say, specify what kind you can do.
Yeah,
but
exactly. One of the things, and I'm not going to answer this for Eddie, but for myself, what you just said resonated with me. Is like watching John Hamm work, you know, like watching him rehearse, watching him shoot a scene. Like I'm like a sponge, like watching John Voight and Ray come together on dialogue and a lot of times the action as well, like mixing the dialogue and the action and making the scene work. Like Liev Schreiber was a master at that. Like he knew Ray Donovan so well. Like I'll give you a quick Liev story.
Yeah, it's fine.
Shauna Duggins was our stunt coordinator. Shauna is one of the premier stunt coordinators and now a director. Like she directs first unit, like episodes, TV episodes, features. She's one of our most talented. Yeah, she's one of our most gifted performers in the stunt industry. She's amazing. And she was a stunt coordinator. And she always knew that she had to have so let's just say we had a fight scene and, you know, Liev's busy. So we would rehearse a fight scene knowing, but we had to give Liev options, you know, because we never knew what was in his mind as far as his characters. Like we know what's on the page.
For those who don't know, action is never in the script. That comes later with the filmmaker's dilemma.
But yeah, pretty much.
It is interesting. I have to tell them. Is that they think, oh, you word that out in a sentence. It's like, no, it reads as so-and-so punches someone 5 times, you know?
Yeah, action. Pretty much. Yeah.
And you got to come up with it. You got to stage it just like you would any talking or walking scene. But yeah. Sorry.
Exactly. Yeah. So like with Liev though, nobody knew Ray Donovan like Liev. So Liev would always make changes. Always. I mean, 9 out of 10, at least, if not higher, but I respected it because it was all, in my opinion, it was always better. It just made sense. So, and Shauna was great because Shauna would come to the table with 3 different options for him at least.
Mm.
Right. So, okay. Hey, Liev, here we are. We got this and that. And he goes, oh, you know, I wouldn't do that. No, that one's too much. I wouldn't, you know, let's do a version of this, but I want this over here or something like that. So we had this one thing where, we have the scene is we got this guy who's stolen something from Ray Donovan. He's tied up in a chair. And his line is, Ray, you can torture me or do whatever you want. I'm not going to tell you where it is. Okay. That's his line. So we did all this stuff where Ray basically comes in and tortures him. He kicks him down, knocks him in the chair, he chokes him with the chair. We had a bunch of different options. We show Ray all the options. We show Liev, excuse me, I get their names mixed up. We show Liev.
Method acting here, folks.
Yeah. We show Liev all the options, and he goes, you know what? I wouldn't do any of that. He goes, I'd just shoot him in the knee.
Oof.
And, just to give you a little backstory on Liev's character at the moment, he had a gun wound, and he was under time crunch to get this item that was stolen from him, or he was going to go to jail. Right. And he's bleeding out. So it makes perfect sense, right? Like he doesn't have time to do any of that stuff, right? Show.
It's great.
So before the guy even gets his line, Ray, you can torture me or do whatever you want. I'm not going to tell you. He just pulls out his gun and shoots him in the kneecap. And he's like, and he's like, okay. I'll tell you, it's like the pain from a gunshot to your kneecap would be worse than any torture you would handle. Yeah. So what he did is he turned that page of action and this beating and this dialogue into like a quarter page of brilliance. Like, it was like, wow. And it's such a process. And, but you know, that's kind of the story. Like nobody knows the character, you know, when you're the lead, like Liev was, like who knows Ray better than Liev? Like he's living it, you know?
I really do hope he gets more applause for this character, because it was not easy, you know. Yeah, you've been on plenty of other shows. You've dealt with Agent Gibbs and Jack Bauer and all that, but I mean, here you got a guy who, whatever he does, he loses every time, and yet he has to keep going because he's a rock. He can take damage. He knows that he's got an unhealthy lifestyle, but you know, he's got an ex-con resume. He is dealing with mental health, and it's not going to go away. All he can do is either get the last kick in or just wait. You know, he's like a samurai ronin mixed in with a hitman with a code of honor, and it's just so intriguing for him to just see how he slowly realizes what he can control versus what he can't, you know, which is his crazy family, you know.
Yeah.
And rival gangsters who have always wanted him dead. I think it was like season 4 or 5 when he realizes, oh, by the way, there's going to be a turf war, and everything I'm trying to do to prevent it is all for nothing. So I got to go to plan C. I was hoping to go to plan B, but I got to go to plan C, which is exit stage right, or do one last trick so I gain the upper hand.
Yeah.
I do hope it gets appreciated years later. They really screwed up kind of the where to syndicate it, because like some Showtime stuff is available on some of these streaming apps and others don't carry it. And I don't know why. I mean, why sit on it?
Yeah, good point.
But I get it. We don't control what the business guys deal with, but yeah. I am glad that you got to be part of that experience and take a fall.
Fun one.
For your, for your friend.
Yeah.
Are there any other actors you whose work you're following also? Like you're just, because some of them are now kind of making the leap. Like Elizabeth Banks came out with Cocaine Bear. It's a surprise hit. And it's interesting seeing actors actually get behind the scenes and do more than just, I'm your feature guy, you know, taking all the credit. It is cool seeing some of them be very involved in the creative process and making the characters make better sense, so there's less prep time.
Well, I tell you one. I'll share one quick one with you, because we're coming up against time. But
yes,
I've never met Reese Witherspoon, but she's pretty amazing what she's done. You know, she started her book with her celebrity. She started a book club, and then you know, she from that book club, she got all the movie rights to all those, and that became such a valuable commodity that she sold it for darn near $1 billion. Her company.
It was really enlightening too, like how the producer game can change instead of, I know someone who knows someone else and I'm the lead and I get creative control. Is like, she pretty much was like, I hate what I'm being offered. What solution do I come up with? And that was the one.
Right. And I really like, that's a great business model to follow. I have a partner. His name's Blake Scribner. He's my writing partner. We have a company called Ascend Entertainment, and we have, some films in pre-production, and we've got some amazing scripts that we've written, and we've got the rights to a couple great stories. And you know, our goal is to really write. We have a couple. We have an entity that's a knockoff called Popcorn Pictures, and those scripts are kind of a throwback to like the Smokey and the Bandits and the Romancing the Stones and Indiana Jones. You know, those romantic action comedies. You know, that we grew up, that inspired us when we were, Blake and I were, you know, when we started watching movies. But, you know, we really want to have positive energy content, you know, broken people, you know, kind of finding themselves and so we found there's a real, desire for that content right now. And so Ascend Entertainment is, we got a couple in production, and we got a couple others that we have the rights to, and we're excited about the future. And the content, but you know, you look at what Reese is doing, and that was a real eye opener for us.
That's neat, and that's a wonderful name, though. Ascend to Climb.
Thanks. Ascend Entertainment, Ascend Entertainment Group. You look up our website, you'll see a couple of our shows that are in pre-production, like our scripts and stories.
Wish nothing but the best. And like you say, there's so many options now. Tubi lets you upload everything. There's so many theater groups that are trying to work with all the AMCs and, like you say, do a return to earlier cinema. I know there was a Sandra Bullock, Channing Tatum movie that was like that, but I'm sure you could do it a little
better. Yeah, we'll hope so. We're going to try.
All right. Well, that's lovely. As we're wrapping this up, the last question I had was, are you recognized for any of your roles? Like, I mentioned 24 to death because I love the hell of that show. You have no idea how many fans there are of that who love the whole ticking time bomb formula. Yeah. And you played numerous kidnappers on there, so it was always kind of fun. I was like, wait, didn't he die last episode? No, he's the Secret Service guy this episode. Okay.
Yeah, that was, I was really grateful they were letting me do that. One season, I worked for Kiefer as a sniper on a SWAT team.
Right.
The same season, I worked for his dad, and Kiefer killed me on the last episode on the oil rig.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I had dialogue and everything. So I always really, that was Jeff Cadiente, by the way. That Jeff got me on that show, and the directors on that show were wonderful. And I've worked with those directors quite a bit over the years, and the first AD and stuff.
Always overshadowing each other, making sure they get all those.
But something I haven't had not since Tyler Perry show I was on. When I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, which I am a lot, I have a house there. I get recognized quite a bit for that show.
Oh, really?
It just like and even I had this story that I told my family. I was in not Jamba Juice. It's called, it's a different smoothie company that over there, Smoothie King. I don't know. It's not really based.
We have it here. It was Steak and Shake and
Yeah. All right. So I was in a Smoothie King, and this is pure COVID. I was on a project, and, I was at a Smoothie King, had to have a mask on, and I order my smoothie with my mask on and a hat. And this lady is standing next to me, and she's staring at me, and she goes, "Are you on Have and Have Nots?" I'm like, "Yeah, how do you know that?" She goes, "I recognize your voice." And I'm like, because I have, like, again, a hat and I'm wearing shorts and a tank top, and I have a hat and a mask on. And she recognized me. You know, I play a district, you know, the political figure on that show. And yeah, I'm always in suits, you know. And so that was a funny one. Yeah. And I was at one time I was in Wilmington, and they recognized me from that. I mean, I could tell you half a dozen times from that show in Atlanta or that area. Other times, you know, like, you know, when 24 was on, everybody saw me. You know, that was TV was more king. Network television was bigger back then. Mm-hmm. And everybody's, you know, were seeing me in NCIS. I guest starred on a
bunch of the different ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
Different roles. But
yeah,
the recent one you did though was cool, because we thought you may or may not be one of the killers on board this, you know, Navy ship. And he's like, "Nope, turns out you're just doing your job." But the guy beneath you is pulling everyone's strings. I have Terminator fans who are big fans of the show. And so they remember the episode where you played the T-600, and they had to very creepily, I don't think you had any dialogue, but you had wonderful makeup, and it helped that they properly lit you with the freaky music. So you got to be a bad guy on that one.
That was a while ago, but I went to a couple signings because I played T-600, I think, in three or four episodes. One episode I got hit by a car in it. I remember that stuff.
Oh, really?
But but anyway, there was, you know, that show had a small window of popularity, and I went and actually did a signing because you know, they won Terminators of each of, you know, different models. So
I take it you got to meet some of the other ones, like Patrick Kilpatrick and all those guys.
Worked with a lot of those guys too, you know.
They've been the go-to, and some of them have really come out of their shell. They've actually really grown as actors.
Yeah.
Past the typecast, but hey, I'm happy for you, and I've got to do the sit down finally. Anything else you want to promote that's upcoming? I saw that you had one horror stalker film coming up that looks
cool. Thanks for asking. Bad Connection is a horror film that's coming out, it's a thriller. It goes all through the streets of Los Angeles, and I think it's going to be on Tubi. And it should hit pretty soon. It's completed. They were going to try to do it for last year's Halloween, and they decided to hold off and do it for this at the end of the first, the second quarter. But I think what I heard, it's going to be on Tubi, and I'm the mass killer in that one. So there's a lot of action. I think
that's going to be fun to watch. Festival. Did you get to do any Q&A at that one?
It was in Berlin. I didn't. I had commitments. I think they would have brought me out there, but anyway, a couple TV, I'm on the last episode of Doom Patrol. I have a small role on that. But if you watch the last episode, you'll see me. Also is in a new FX series called Class of 09, coming out shortly. So I have a couple things coming out.
This should bring you back to the old man.
Yeah.
You open up the premiere, you punch Jeff Bridges in the face, and you say, "Motherfucker, you remember me?" You don't get to fly to my face with your damn dogs.
Yeah, that was
that wild. Won't happen. That but fun. It'd be cool if they give you a different role.
Yeah,
but no, I'm happy for you. I'm glad that TV is becoming a little more theatrical and bigger budget. And again, you have all these guys who you look forward to, and they surprise you. You surprise them, and it's all. These are all just memorable stories that you take home every day. And you're just like, guys, I'm doing more than living the dream. I'm working where I want to work. So,
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. Yeah. I appreciate it. And thanks for having me on your podcast. You've interviewed a lot of great people, and always welcome to come back. So I'd be happy to come back.
Let's name your favorite movie or show. We'll get you on one. But
love it.
Glad we could do this. Be safe out there at work tonight, and Godspeed.
Yeah, take care now. Thanks.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up Review Show.